You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
That's a strange energy for a Monday.
We had a three-day weekend, Derek. I feel great.
Yes, but then we all have to return to work.
We do.
Not that we're here to muddle it down for you anyway. I just like the heavy music, the good morning. Yep. Like, brother, good for you.
Three-day weekend, got to relax a lot. Was in Toronto yesterday, saw the Halos lose. We don't have to worry about that.
Let's go Jays!
Great weekend.
Your AL East leading Toronto Blue Jays.
Winners of eight straight Toronto Blue Jays.
Buffalo baseball, baby.
I'll tell you right now, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Blue Jays are a fun watch, man. They really are.
They righted the ship from an early season slump. It's a shame that we're not even halfway through the season, or we are relatively close to the halfway point, but
That's fine. They're
playing their best baseball right now. I would like it to just continue, please.
You know what I see with this, though? And to be fair, I went into this, obviously, as a Halos fan. Me and my brother were talking about this a lot yesterday. I want to attend a game as a Jays fan. I don't hate the Jays. I would happily go there and watch them play like Cleveland or anybody else in the AL West.
They're also downright dominant at home, though.
They are very, very good at home. The Rogers Center was packed yesterday. I mean, legitimately, it was a great crowd for a Sunday afternoon game. The end of a series, it was packed in there. It was beautiful. Thank goodness the dome wasn't open. Having walked much of that city in 88 degree weather, if that dome was open, we would have been in for a long afternoon. It was not, which was good.
Only the Mets have a better win percentage at home right now.
But man, they're a good watch. And I'll tell you this, I went as a Halos fan with the assumption that they lost. Okay, you're going to be sellers at the deadline. If you're a Blue Jays fan, I don't know their prospect pool in terms of how great they are graded-wise. I know all of them play for the Bisons. I don't know necessarily how well they are graded. But this was something the last time I went to Toronto that was exciting was that the Angels were buyers in the deadline trying to make a playoff push. But that's all. It was a playoff push. It wasn't for a division title or anything like that. Toronto fans, you got to be having that feeling and that excitement that comes around of we're going to be buyers at the deadline. We're going to do something to push now for an AL East title, let alone just a playoff spot. Because the Yankees continue to play poorly. They won yesterday against the Mets, although late, the Mets had a real chance there to take that game again and sweep them as well. But being in Toronto, it's such a nice sports city as well, at least for baseball from what I've seen. I imagine hockey might be a little more aggressive. But there was some jeering and stuff like that, because I'm fairly certain the two people I went with, we were the only Angels fans. I'm almost certain of that. Definitely in our section. And it was it was good camaraderie. It was fun. The crowd was awesome. The city's beautiful. I love going to Toronto. Now it's every few years. I end up making a weekend trip out of it with my family or even just the day trip. The food scene's incredible. And the weather the two times we've gone has been great. And it's just that is something, if you haven't done, you want to go see a major league ball game. If you've been to Pittsburgh, Cleveland too, I absolutely recommend going to Toronto. The drive, by the way, Derek. I know we all know you get on the QEW and just go.
Yeah.
It never feels as long as it actually is, quote unquote, is. I think from my house, it's about a 2-hour drive. But from the border, it's technically an hour and a half. It never feels like that, even once. It felt like such a quick drive outside of getting out, dealing with, post-game traffic. It was great. I absolutely loved it. If you haven't gone, I cannot recommend it enough. And it helps, too. The Jays are a great watch now. You can't even look at their run differential and give them heat for it. They're plus 11 now. Derek's mentioned outside of the Mets, plus 12 now. Outside of the Mets, they have the best home winning percentage in baseball.
And it's tied with the Dodgers.
With the Dodgers. And their lineup, Derek, yesterday, and I like this now. At least from the games I've seen, they don't show batting averages really anymore. As the highlighted thing, you can find it when a batter comes up. But they'll show the whole lineup's OPS, because that's really all of your hitting statistics put into one. That lineup, they're just playing on a different level right now. I was so prepared for most of that game to see George Springer hit a two-run home run, hit a three-run home run, the way he's been on. Guerrero hit a monster double early in the game. I got to see Trout home run. That made all of it worth it. I'll be completely honest. The first time I went, he was hurt. I got to see Ohtani hit a monster double. So I got to see the guys do their things, and that was cool. But can't recommend it enough. I've loved the sports in the summer so far. The NBA and the NHL was super interesting really up until the end, NBA especially. And then you got the golf has been really good and the baseball has been really good. You know, even if you're not a Yankees fan, they've been interesting, whether it's been positive or negative, they've been interesting. You know, to start the year, they're scoring historic pace kind of run numbers. I mean, we've talked to Sal Marano a few times, especially you look at the Aaron Judge numbers that were going on
right,
there.
Especially early on in the year.
And how ridiculous that was. And now here locally, you know, I don't necessarily know how much Buffalo makes up Toronto Blue Jays fans. I know the last two days, Mike Schoep's been here alone. We've taken calls of like how you got there. It's been a lot of Cincinnati Reds fans. Surprisingly, that's really been the team that's run
the Jays don't have as huge of a following, despite the fact that Buffalo is the minor league affiliate. They did stray away for a little bit and then got back to Toronto, but they've served a couple of teams.
The Mets, so, I know, is one of them.
The Mets is one of them, the Pirates, Cleveland.
Pirates is a weird one.
I know, but it happened.
I can get to the other three. The Pirates just makes zero sense.
I mean, it was also a decent amount of time ago. But so you can see a lot of origins going from there as well. You know, it's also the one team that requires you to have a passport to go watch.
That's right.
So that might, you know, turn some people off, for example. If I'm going to make that drive, why not just go right down the 90 to Cleveland or, you know, the Yankees are on television, and so there is a bit of a convenience factor, despite the fact that Toronto's, in terms of mileage, the closest.
Yep.
But I don't know how I gravitated here. Like, as a kid, I just liked the color scheme.
Fair. It's a good color scheme.
I also, as a kid, liked the number 49, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know. We've all got our red flags. It's okay.
Hey, high 40 numbers are good numbers. 47. Everyone out there knows what I'm talking about. Christian Benford knows what's up.
Yeah. John Lynch made that number great.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I can't really say the same about 49. Like, why as a kid did I pick that one?
See, the thing with Benford is, you know, it's deliberate. It wasn't just that he was a sixth-round rookie corner. It was he wore a number in the 40s at Villanova, too. He's doing that deliberately.
And that's why it's great.
Which is a red flag. But not in the bad connotation. There's a screw loose there, but we like that in our football players. You like
there's
that in your athletes.
Screw loose there.
Because a corner who plays as good as he is,
you and this
should be like, Patrick Surtain. I'm gonna wear two. I'm gonna wear a number in the 20s. He's like, nah, 40s. All right,
you
better be good.
You and your war on numbers is always going to be fascinating to me.
And it'll never go away. But yeah, it was a great time. Absolutely loved it. If you haven't made the trip, I cannot recommend it enough. I will say, though, I did not have a lot of signal yesterday, so I was catching up on the Bo Byram news very much an hour or two later than
everyone
else
was. Oh, so we're doing this
right now? We can do it real quick if you want to.
I guess we're doing this right now.
Him and, Connor Timmins, they're both going to arbitration.
One was player filed, the other was team filed, so there is differences. Let that be known. Team filed allows for the player to pick the term on contract in terms of arbitration filings, which could mean that the Sabres are either going to walk themselves into UFA with Bo Byram in 2 years, or Byram picks a 1 year and we either do this all over again or it facilitates a trade and he's up for renegotiation with another club.
So if he picks the 1 year, he doesn't walk straight to UFA, it has to be the 2 year then?
I think that's the case.
Okay.
Unless because it's player designated, that might be like the, oh my God, this might be the Ottawa Senators Mark Stone fumble.
Sweet.
I don't know for sure, so I'm not going to put myself into a spiral here. The one positive I can gain out of this, it puts a clock on talks.
Yes, Byram does need to play two more seasons before he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yes. So, but also we've seen awkward dealings before with that, most notably with Mark Stone in Ottawa. So I'm not going to guarantee that that's the situation, but because of how the Sabres have been run over the last 14 years, that fear is not gone away. However, this puts a clock on negotiations. That's the one positive of this. Whether it be a trade or you're going to play with Byram for this year or even the next 2 years, for example, it puts a clock on it. We're not going to be waiting until August to figure out what's going on with the situation. No, we're going to get a timeline here now. And either he ends up getting traded or, as I'm suspecting at this point, this is the roster for opening day.
Yeah, that's I know where you've been sitting at, is that this is probably what the team is going to look like.
This is what the team is probably going to look like.
Give or take a few prospects making the opening night
and
roster.
It's more about Kevin Adams staying firm on something, and I commend him for this, of not taking futures for Byram and thinking that this is the best I'm going to do right now is have Byram here next to Dahlin, because that's not a bad thing at all. Like, oh, he's a Dahlin merchant. Yeah, so what? He's playing next to Dahlin again. Do we want him to look better for a prospective trade next year? Maybe. That wouldn't be so bad. Or even to start the year, like I've been thinking about a Matt Duchene situation.
Yep.
There are worse fates than having him play next to Rasmus Dahlin again. Like, come on. It doesn't have to be divide by zero kinds of logic here.
Right.
Put the guy next to Dahlin and he looks good. You know what scouts use? Their eyeballs. You know what he'll look like when he's playing next to Dahlin?
Yeah.
Really sharp. Because that's something Dahlin can do for a lot of players. And Byram is a quality skater on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, skater, I say. You know, like, obviously the analytics do say that he is a different player without him, but he skates and moves well. That should be enough to entice a team. At the beginning of the season, that's looking to get a little hot or take advantage of a hot start. That said, say the Sabres start strong, like they did this past year. They come back from Europe. They kind of steady themselves up, and in November, they're actually looking like a competent playoff threat. And then December happened.
Yes.
We don't talk about that. But if the Sabres get off to that kind of start and make a Byram trade, that won't sit well.
No.
But at that point, you're weaponizing, hey, we got off to a strong start. We're going to keep them so that we don't go into a tailspin. That's probably what you're doing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think, in terms of defense, yeah, there's a lot worse rosters you can have on opening night than the decor of a pairing of Dahlin and Byram, Power Kesselring, and Samuelson and Timmins.
Mm-hmm. When you do put it like that, it's like, okay, if the netminders are solid.
Ready? If that's your decor on opening night, you're going to find out hard and fast what UPL really is. Because if you can't get it done with a decor like this, either remove the entirety of the assistant coaching staff, or you got to get rid of UPL.
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong if defensively you are a bunch of sieves again.
Mm-hmm.
You have a team with Rasmus Dahlin. You should not be this bad defensively, especially when he has gotten far better in his own zone from where he was as a rookie.
Norris Trophy votes this year.
Sixth.
Yep.
The league has taken notice. Also, you look at zone entries against him. Those metrics were really good.
Mm-hmm. They were, absolutely.
But now you got to get the rest of the team going here, and that's why you get Kesselring. That's why you get Timmins. You try to create depth within your defensive pipeline, or not pipeline, but like in your defensive core, that it gets you to where you've got to be.
And the hope there now is that if Dahlin does get hurt, you won't lose 13 in a row. Because the defense without him is a mess. And even with him is not great.
And that's also a claim for keeping Byram for these next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
That is a claim. We're keeping him because there's a lot worse fates to have. Say Dahlin goes out than a Byram Power. Not even necessarily tandem, but like you're splitting the duties.
Yeah.
You guys are going to be the ones carrying the group around right now while Dahlin's out. Heaven forbid. There we go. We're going to fix that right now. That's the case for keeping him. I don't know. Because, like, the Paterka thing, that happened all so fast. Byram, there's not been nearly as much noise about it other than, like, you know, we hear whispers that he doesn't want to be in Buffalo. But if that's the case, well, Kevin Adams has proven you don't want to be here. Get out, and I'm going to force it out of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get out of here. We're going to find the best package we can, and that's it. I don't know if that's happening here. as much as the noise or like the rumors or anything like that mm-hmm. have been going around. Because there's not even as many legitimate insider reports on these things. Just reports that there might be a trade happening.
Yeah.
Again, Paterka, outside of Saravalli, nobody really had that until it showed up suddenly and extremely. And that's where I feel like that Elliot Friedman, like 30 for 30 thing.
Yeah.
It's about what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the Sabres still never wished J.J. Paterka well.
Yeah, that's not. Well, actually, I'm kind of excited to see when Utah comes to Buffalo for the first time
yeah,
this year.
Like,
that's actually.
But also, we're never going to get that real answer. You know that. You ask a hockey player about that, very rarely are you going to get the real story.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get hockey player talk.
Ooh,
so,
boy.
Yeah.
So exciting.
We're going to get the, we thought we had a chance to go to a different situation and, something mm-hmm, like that, mm-hmm. along those lines. With that many us. Byram, I don't see as much of that. So, credence to wherever they are right now, but I'm really leaning toward the feeling. This is nothing I have on information other than my gut feeling that this is what they're going to settle on. Because the offers aren't good enough, he's going to take his ball and go home. And this is the roster day one. Question is it good enough?
Well, that, I've seen a lot of people go, is it 15 points better? Because that would have been the playoffs.
I would dismiss 15 points because when you go into a tailspin like that.
Yeah, right. You mentioned the 13-game losing streak. That's not, it shouldn't happen again.
It's not that it's not something that should be replicable.
Mm-hmm.
It sinks you. You were playing in last place for 4 months.
Yeah.
That's dreadful. But also, you managed to not be the team in last place at the end of the year. Which tells you you were actually better than that.
Mm-hmm.
You were better than the 13-game losing streak. It is something that's criminal that should not be happening.
Yeah.
And it's a team collapsing upon itself. Not having Darlene for half of it sure doesn't help.
Right.
But once you start losing more games like that, it really starts to affect you. If you pick up even 3 wins out of that, it's still a double-digit losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
It's just almost like incomprehensible how that happens, let alone to a team twice in 5 years. But that's neither here nor there. They're not 15 points lesser of a playoff team. But they're also still not a playoff team. And I'm looking at Columbus and what they're building, and I'm thinking, they've passed you. I look at what Montreal has done and then decided, we're not sitting on these laurels. We know that we need to get better as a roster, and they're adding. Ottawa, going to stay the course on this one. I think Ottawa might be the team to drop off a little bit.
Okay.
They're very volatile.
Mm-hmm.
But are you going to be the team? There's no way the Rangers are going to be that bad again. Not with Shesterkin in net. Can the Islanders have a fast retool? They have Ilya Sorokin.
Mm-hmm.
So you have quality goaltending. Can they inject enough youth in there to be a problem again? Pittsburgh, dead. Boston, super dead.
Mm-hmm.
And making more baffling decisions than even what I can think about with the Sabres. It's tough to look at this team and go, where can you take advantage of a hole in the armor to infiltrate the postseason? You have to be better than Ottawa, Montreal, Columbus, and probably both New York teams. Pittsburgh, I think, is toast. Boston, Philly, also toast. Even Philly's trying to change some things around, though. Detroit, I don't know whatever to make of Detroit. Like, yeah, the Red Wings.
Let's go.
The Red Wings had 86 points, but they never moved the needle for me
mm-hmm.
as a team that is going to be just hanging around but not good enough to make it. And Eisenman's on year seven.
Yep.
But you have so many teams. Like, I'm thinking of three that are dead in the water. And much like how the Sabres in these losing streaks that have happened over the last 3 years, can you overcome all of them in the standings? Are you going to get past that many teams in front of you? Because Toronto's not going away. Tampa's not going away. Florida's definitely not going away. The Metro, you'd think Washington and Carolina and New Jersey are all pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
They have young cores that can really keep things going. And now Washington also gets to play without the pressure of a goals record for Ovechkin.
Yeah, now it just kind of becomes play.
Now it's just play hockey again.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think Washington's a team to drop off, are they worse than top three in the Metro?
Well, no, because we've talked a lot. The Metro is specifically not very good.
Not very good.
Even in the top end.
But even say Washington drops off a little bit, are they enough to be a playoff seed holder, automatic qualifier? Or are they now a wild card team that you also have to fight against?
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Metro, when one leaves, another has to take its place.
Yeah.
Of those teams that I mentioned, the New York teams, or Columbus, excuse me. Like, one of those takes that place. And Washington's now in the thick of the same thing that you're fighting for,
yes,
which is two playoff spots. You are not fighting for the division. You are not fighting for an automatic three. You are fighting for one of the two wild cards. Because the Atlantic, as we've mentioned, is stacked. Toronto is not going anywhere. Yeah, they lost Mitch Marner.
They'll probably not be a cup favorite, but they're probably still going to be a playoff team.
They're probably not getting 108 points again. But they'll settle within, say there's a 10-point drop-off without Marner. Okay?
We're still in the 90s.
Yeah, you're still in the 90s, still very comfortably hanging around a playoff spot.
Yeah.
A 10-point drop-off gets you to 98. And I think that Toronto is a good enough regular season team that I don't think they're worrying about that. Marner had a lot to do with their regular season success, but they still have Matthews. They still have Nylander. They still have Tavares.
Mm-hmm.
They still have Morgan Riley. They still have a good team.
They signed Matthew Nyes to
Matthew Nyes is extended.
They're expecting Nicolas him to take
Waugh
that next.
Probably fits in perfectly as a middle six forward for them.
So, yeah, so they're not going anywhere. A lot of
Tampa's
the top teams
Tampa's definitely
aren't.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah, a lot of the top teams aren't going.
Florida, annoyingly so. Keep hey, we're going to retain all three of these guys. Thanks for killing all the fun, Panthers.
Keep going. Keep winning.
Gross. So who are the Sabres surpassing?
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, with this roster that has a massive hole in its top six, and you're banking on either Jack Quinn or Isaac Rosén to fill that void. Are you just hoping to make the playoffs bass-ackwards?
Pretty much. 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to talk to Sabres, the Bo Byram arbitration situation, do you even expect a trade to come? Or is this, like with Derek, the roster that we are likely to see opening night? Also, want to touch on the Bills, and I tweeted this out a little while ago, and this will sort of be the topic of today. ESPN has James Cook in their top 10 running back list. He comes in at number 8. That was done by Jeremy Fowler. And so the question of the day is, who on the Bills do you think will earn top 10 honors this time next year? I have a player on the defense. I think they absolutely could be that player. I want to talk about that coming up after a quick timeout. We'll take your calls at 803-0550. This is WGR.
It's a pitch play to Cook. Dives, reaches for the end zone, and he's got it! He is in for the touchdown! What an amazing effort by Cook, who is back in the kitchen!
Chris Brown there on the call. Bills running back James Cook, one of his 16 rushing touchdowns from last year. Very much a breakout year for what is now going to be the fourth year running back. It's his second 1,000-yard season in a row. He did so in just 207 attempts. However, as you've probably heard many of us on this station talk about, that can be both a positive and a negative. His usage is not super high, but For our purposes today, we are talking James Cook and really the Bills as a whole. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN has begun his top 10 list for positions. It's league intel from 70-plus executive coaches and scouts. It's up at his Twitter. It's free to read. And for James Cook, he does come in top 10 for running backs. He's right at the bottom of the list at number 8 overall. I actually do think that is a good spot for Cook. I think that's about right. Last year, he was an honorable mention. This year, he comes in at number 8. I think that's about right. He had a very explosive year. Great fantasy player, again, with all the touchdowns. But there's some room for him to grow. And even in the kind of the piece they have about him, I know Joe brought this up to an NFL executive, an AFC executive, said he's perfect for the offense, quarterback that spreads the thing around. He's good in the passing game, catches the ball really well, good in open space. Not sure he's elite yet, but he's really, really good. And really, I think most of us do have this question. What will he do? What is he if the touches go up? If all of a sudden he is asked to be a three-down back, touching the rock 20, 25 times a game, what does he then become? And we really don't know. We don't know for sure yet. And it's kind of something, if you can remember, C.J. Spiller from a number of years ago, a decade ago. He had his breakout season. I think it was like 1,200 yards rushing. His yards per carry was absurd, but his carries were low. He didn't have a ton. The next year he gets more, and it was like, oh, maybe it was more of a flash in the pan kind of season.
Sometimes a player will be more effective when they are kept fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that Cook does at times deserve more touches, but it also does seem like the Bills can figure out pretty quickly who's got the hot hand on a certain day.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes Ray Davis has more of a say in the run game. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes there are days where he's getting absolutely stuffed last year, and you're feeding James Cook the rock, or you're giving more plays to Ty Johnson. The Bills have too much versatility on offense. Again, the offensive coordinator's mantra is everybody eats.
Mm-hmm.
That is not exempt from the backfield.
Yeah, his highest rushing totals last year was, in the regular season at least, 20. That was week 5 against Houston in a loss in which the passing game was effectively a net negative. It was a really bad day passing-wise ultimately. It's after the next week against the Jets, they make the trade for Amari Cooper. Everyone kind of knew they needed to do that. They didn't even have Khalil Shakir that day. His lowest rushing total, though, of the year was 6. It's going to be 6. That's the loss against the Rams. That ultimately is a day where
they have to
game,
throw to catch up.
Yeah, they're playing to catch up the whole thing. Now, with that being said, in the playoffs, he had 23 rushing attempts against Denver. That is ultimately the season high. It has been very much noted in the playoffs, though, against Kansas City. He only has 13 rushing attempts, 3 targets, 3 catches. He's not, though, used much on that last drive at all. I don't even think he is on the last drive.
Which was bafflingly so, because
he was their best player that day. That is inarguable. He had 2 touchdowns as well. I mentioned the 3 catches. 3 catches for 49 yards, good for a 16.3 average. He was their best player that
day. And one of those touchdowns was, as we have pointed out, potentially iconic.
Mm-hmm.
If that ends up being the final score of the game,
or even just one of the scores that leads them to a win.
Yes, that's one where you don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Slam dunks it in there on a 4th down. Effectively, your season is on the line. And James Cook helps with a stay of execution. I don't understand you hear some dismissive talk sometimes about James Cook just because he wants a new contract and he wants more money. Sometimes fans will look at it and go, well, what about the team? I get it. You're a fan of the Buffalo Bills. You're not a fan particularly, strictly of James Cook. James Cook is just on the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, understandable. I get it. Yep.
But you don't need to dismiss what he's done because he's looking for more money.
It got a little contentious this offseason, I think, with Cook in particular.
That's what I'm saying. But
there wasn't a lot of communication, so all we had was the number.
But stay real,
and then
people.
Him retweeting some stuff, and that was about it. But, I do really look at, kind of what his value would be, and I think NFL executive scouts, what have you, could be right in that we don't know with him, because the next guy up, the guy that finishes 7th in this list, is Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor ran the ball significantly more than James Cook did.
Right.
He had 303 rushing attempts to James Cook's 207, a whole 100 more. Now, he ultimately finished with about 1,400 yards, just a little over, and less touchdowns. But he stuck right about where Cook was in terms of average. He was 4.7 to Cook's 4.9. Cook also had 32 catches for 258 yards and two touchdowns, where Jonathan Taylor had 18 receptions for 136 yards and a touchdown. So he was used more in the rushing game flat out, where Cook, I guess, was a bit of a mix. But again, like, and that's the guy one place above him is touching the ball about 100 times more than he is in a season.
Right.
And so that's where I look at, I think number eight is a good spot. I think that's exactly right. But that's also where you, looking at this, just using this list, I think that's where you will see a lot of Bills fans get nervous at the idea of paying him $15 million a year.
Yes.
Even you know, upwards of that, because you look and go, he's not touching the ball nearly as much as the guys ahead of him. Taylor's just one spot ahead of him. You get to Saquon Barkley. You get to Derrick Henry. You get to Ashton Jeanty will be this year with Pete Carroll as his head coach.
Bijan Robinson
in Atlanta, who's, I think, very much forgotten because Atlanta has been a particularly good team. I think that could change this year.
Bijan got to 304 carries last year.
And he had over 1,400 yards.
And ready?
What was
James Cook had 16 touchdowns, right?
Yeah.
There were seven running backs last year that had 14 or more. Robinson was one of them. Well, hang on. Six running backs, Jalen Hurts.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But
forgot he was very high up there.
Oh,
as well.
My God. It's ridiculous. But think about that. They had 27 rushing touchdowns between two players last year. Hilarious to me. But that's the thing. Like, ready? Then it's seven running backs with 13 or more rushing touchdowns. That's still very impressive within the league. Jahmyr Gibbs does not get the football nearly as much as I think he should.
Well, because they do have a thunder and lightning kind of aspect.
Still, but he still had 43 more carries.
Yeah.
And he averaged 5.6 yards per touch.
He was ranked third on this list as
insane,
well.
Insane. The kind of player that he is. So, again, it is tough to look at what Cook has been doing, though, and think you're going to give him that much more money. It's almost like as a team, you're probably looking at it as an overpayment. However, that said, it's not like James Cook is doing nothing.
No.
The man was fantastic springing big plays last year, at least on the Bills roster.
And he was one of their true consistent weapons. That was a big conversation for me where I didn't want this to go to a point where he was traded this offseason because I didn't know who else they had that could be a danger. I love Khalil Shakir, but I'm not going to sit here and say Khalil Shakir is a threat for touchdowns all the time. He is not Amon-Ra St. Brown, who plays the slot receiver position the same. He is much more, I think, a Cole Beasley potentially plus by the time of his prime of his career because of the yak ability, but he's not going to be that guy.
Of players that qualify, Cook was fifth in yards per carry.
Yeah.
There's a big play element to him.
So he is a weapon. And that's where I think it's absolutely right that he should be.
So we cannot dismiss what he is. Yeah. We can't dismiss what he is. And that's perfectly fine. So you can like Ray Davis, for example, but it's not going to matter because they're not going to have him out carrying James Cook when he is one of the best in the league last year at yards per touch.
Yeah. And so with that, looking at it this year, Cook ultimately did have a breakout season. He finishes around the same in rushing yards, but the touchdowns really popped off. He did become very much a known named player in the league. The Bills have got to start hoarding some of these guys, get more named players, what have you. I think they have a real shot at that. And so on that, I tweeted out, we're taking your calls, 803-0550, the number two call. Who on the Bills do you think will earn those top 10 honors this time next year? And for me, I've mentioned Ed Oliver, I think, is a really, really good player that could potentially be elite. I think Christian Benford, Derek, when the cornerback list comes out, will actually already be on the list because he is very much an underrated guy, but scouts know who he is. And I think that also be, I think it's an easy answer with potentially an improved secondary where the second cornerback might get more targets.
Right.
Or flat out, Benford may have, because it's an improved secondary, Benford may have more opportunities for the interceptions, which will always, that's the pop-off staff for corners. I think he'll prove that he might even be an arguably all-pro level corner, definitely Pro Bowl. He's already there. But for me, the player I went with was Greg Rousseau. And he's somebody I've been frustrated with at times. I was okay with the pick out of Miami. He sat for a year due to COVID, and I think it was a lot to do with like personal life with his mom, because I think she worked in healthcare and stuff like that. But he had a 15-sack season at Miami. But a lot of them were covered sacks. However, he's coming to the league, and he's been a very good player. And I will say, in 2024, and this is per Football Reference, last year he was top 20 in quarterback hurries, top 10 in QB knockdowns, top 15 in quarterback pressures, and top 30 in sacks. And that's effectively you not getting much help from the interior. And you kind of being the only consistent element there. Von Miller was not consistent. AJ Epinesa was not consistent. I've mentioned the interior. Ed Oliver definitely was not consistent last year. And now this year, you go into this season.
Right.
You've added a ton onto that defensive line. Not only just through draft picks, three of which, by the way, at the high end, you know, first to fourth round with Deion Walker, Landon Jackson, and TJ Sanders. You have added a ton there. Then you also go to free agency with Hoyt and Ogunjobi, who will be coming in week 16. Bosa, who's already here.
Week six.
Did I say week 16?
Yes, you did.
Week six. And then you have Bosa, who we'll see where his health is.
There's six in the name.
But I think ultimately the additions you made through the draft could really help you. And then, as I mentioned, the improved secondary. If he's already at these numbers without much help, to the point where most people acknowledge, outside of needing like that one kind of option that in the playoffs you just know they're going to make you a play, if you ask a lot of people, their biggest issue has actually been pass rush. If he's putting up these numbers now at 24 years old, what's he going to be if Landon Jackson and TJ Sanders hit right away? And I'm not saying be Pro Bowl or all-pro players, just be really darn good players right away. He had 8 sacks last year. Does that jump up to 11.5, 12 in terms of QB pressures? He's already top 15.
It could also spread out amongst the team.
It totally could.
So he might stick around 8, 9.
He might, but also...
But if I get a boost from other players throughout the roster, that is more of a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would think that Rousseau is probably less likely. Matter of fact, my player might have an outside chance of being in the top 10 of his position right now. Terrell Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
Terrell Bernard has become a linchpin within the Bills defense, and especially within the injuries that have happened to Matt Milano, has taken over as the de facto leader on the second level. He played well when Dorian Williams was in. He played well when Milano was trying to work himself back in the lineup. And he was rewarded as such. I wouldn't be surprised if Terrell Bernard holds on to a distinction this year, let alone staying like that and being named on another top 10 list next year at linebacker.
Yeah.
Mostly because it is very hard to see consistency within the linebacker position year in and year out in the NFL. I do think there's a lot of volatility there. The one downside is, they've kind of bunched all of them now. Like, if you're a Will linebacker, if you're the Mike, it does seem like it's pretty much we're grouping all linebackers together.
Mm-hmm.
But Bernard has shown he can play on either side of it. Especially now when offenses are running primarily nickel as a base defense in this day and age. But I wouldn't be surprised if Bernard has gotten some recognition at this point. That said, it's a lot easier to recognize a running back who had 16 touchdowns than it is to recognize a linebacker in league circles.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see what the rest of the list looks like. But
Bernard is somebody.
My prediction is that Bernard might even be on here this year.
He could be. Bernard, I think, has a real good shot at it. He gets turnovers. That's been true since day one.
He's made flashy plays the minute he stepped into that lineup. We were all kind of like, okay, what's the impact going to be of Tremaine Edmonds leaving for Chicago? Well, the answer was not at all.
Yeah. I think he's a really good shout. We'll get some of your thoughts on Twitter and also, again, of course, taking your calls on who do you think by this time next year could break into ESPN's top 10 list on the Buffalo Bills. We've heard Greg Rousseau. We've heard Terrell Bernard. Love to hear your thoughts. We've got a few of them already on Twitter. We'll read that again after a quick timeout. You're listening to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Wrapping up hour number one here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shopping online at northtownkia.com. Asking the question today, with ESPN's top 10 list coming out today, starting with running backs, James Cook made the list, number 8 overall for running backs last year, not ranked. He falls just behind guys like Jonathan Taylor, who came in seventh. And so we asked the question, who do you think by this time next year on the Bills could find themselves on that list? I've mentioned Greg Rousseau. Derek, you've mentioned Terrell Bernard.
With the outside chance that he might be there this year.
This year. And on that point, Todd brings up Christian Benford, who is somebody I've mentioned I actually think would be a really good shout. The only problem is for me there, is I do think he'll be on the list. I think it might be towards the bottom. I would not be surprised or even upset if he's 10th. I would love for him to get any of that recognition at all. But I do think with the improved defensive line, I do think it's improved. I think there's an improved secondary with Harrison, Doran Strong, even Trey White coming in. I think they're going to be better than where they were last year, especially towards the end of the year. I think there is a really good chance Benford becomes, quote-unquote, a named player, a known guy across the league, especially with all the primetime games the Bills play, a timely interception or two here or there during primetime games. I think very quickly he could become that guy of like, yep, he's one of the top 10 corners in football. I think Todd's absolutely right on that. And then Joshua had an interesting one that I just can't get around. Ray Davis.
Which Ray Davis, I know you want to be hopeful that the heir apparent or the player that was drafted could be able to immediately step in there. I think that Ray Davis's presence will also threaten for James Cook to also not be a top 10 running back per ESPN next year.
If you believe Ray Davis is that good.
If he ends up playing that well.
Yeah.
It's almost like this accidental, like, oopsies sort of thing.
Yeah.
To where you take each other out. Kind of like, hey, remember that MVP discussion last year? And the Ravens had two of them. And you could say, if you have two MVPs, you have no MVPs.
Because statistically, that is true. I mean,
if you have
49ers.
In this day and age, if you have two top 10 running backs, you have zero top 10 running backs because there's only one football and the Bills also employ Josh Allen at quarterback.
Yeah.
If they didn't, say this is a Tyrod Taylor-led offense. Yes, I'd be willing to listen because then you're probably running the football enough to where that's a realistic possibility.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's not enough of a football when Josh Allen is your quarterback because, ready? If Ray Davis ends up as a top 10 running back, there's one of two ways that happens. God forbid anything that's an injury, so I'm going to knock on wood to stop that. But the other is you're running the football way too much for a team that has Josh Allen, and we all will not be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two scenarios within the realistic lines of logic. And I know you're not calling your shot that James Cook's going to get hurt. And anything potential on, like, what if he holds in? Too many running backs have looked at the Le'Veon Bell situation and learned a tough lesson. That lesson is, we're not taking this from a running back. It's a different day and age. You are replaceable. There's no way that James Cook goes ahead and sits out an entire year.
Especially when, in the final year of his deal, he's making the most money he has in his entire career. He hasn't made that much.
Right.
To account for all the – if we're really sitting here in the Le'Veon Bell situation, he literally hasn't gotten enough money for it to be any sort of a financially sound strategy for him to go, I'll sit out the whole year and make it back. He's making $5.2 million this year.
The highest amount
he made before that was last year at $1.1 million.
Who also then said when he returned for minicamp, I like my money.
Yeah, he's telling you. He's going to play it out. And if he's not a Bill at the end of free agency next year, okay.
I think the thing we can all say is I'm going to miss James Cook, but I'm going to savor it while he's still here. because he is a good talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also good enough that he is the big play element of the running back trio.
Yeah, absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
We do a lot, and I think we should be valued as that, and all the hard work that we put in and on the ground and pass blocking and all those type of things, and you know, I think we should be valued more.
Buffalo Bills running back James Cook. That was from Mandatory Minicamp talking about running backs do a lot, and that's not incorrect at all. It is a bit of a James Cook day. I wouldn't say negatively at all. I know we've kind of, I don't want to say downplayed him. It can be a little weird to talk about Cook because he is a very good player. They just don't use him like you would a top five running back. On him, though, we've mentioned ESPN. They're releasing their top 10 players at certain positions list. They started with running backs today. James Cook came in at number 8. And we also got the NFL top 10 players of 2025 list that's been coming out slowly but steadily. And landing in at number 89 is James Cook. So it's a bit of a Cook day, which is nice for him. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. It is a beautiful Monday following, hopefully, what was a long and fruitful weekend for the 4th of July.
I've got a hot take.
Oh, here we go.
It was too hot.
It did get a little hot. I will concur with
get
that.
Get it? Hot take? I'll see myself out.
I will concur with that. I mentioned I was in Toronto yesterday. I'm not even going to know.
The daggers Joshua is staring into me right now.
I'm a big dad joke guy, but that was too much.
That was too much?
It was a little too on the nose?
Just a bit.
It also didn't help you looked him dead in the eyes as you said it and finished it.
No, I stared at you.
Well, then you looked right over at him.
I did look at him, but I looked back over at him and there were daggers.
Yep. But it was a little hot. Walking around Toronto yesterday, the sun was out. It was 88 degrees. And let me tell you, my family's reaction when we walked into the Rogers Center and we saw that the dome was closed, the vibes increased exponentially. It was absurd. It was like, oh, wait a second. It's not just going to be ice cold water on our necks the whole day. We can have an adult beverage. Let's go. Let's go, boys. Let's go set it up. And it stayed closed the rest of the day. I have been there, though, when the dome is opened. The last time we went, it was a rainy day, and then the rain went away, and they slowly opened it for like two innings. It was awesome to watch
right
as it happened. But it was a little toasty. It was a little toasty.
It was a little toasty. Like, it was too toasty. Possibly.
But ultimately, a good three-day weekend, very much needed. Again, I'm coming in here on a Monday in a good, in a happy, good attitude.
Like, I'm never, like, I'm probably, like, never, me. I'm probably never leaving this area because, like, yesterday was too hot.
Yeah, in Buffalo, 88 hits you, and you're like, whoa.
I will never end up being
also,
one of those snowbirds.
We were in a heat advisory warning, weren't we?
Yeah,
in Western
bit.
New York, yeah. So, I mean, like, it's not going to get that all the time.
Yeah, but still, you'd think I'd want more.
No, you've been pretty dead set on you like winter and fall. And
I do.
Yeah.
This is not
a surprising take for
me. I'm weird. Why do people that are friends with me talk to me?
I don't know. I mean, people live in Canada and they love it. I mean, for the weather.
Zachary!
No, I mean, like, can't, like.
I am also a winter guy.
Yeah, see?
Like, I totally.
People in the North absolutely love
winter. An entire country just because they're north of us.
No, but like, you will deal with cold winters and you love it up there. Good for you. People in Minnesota, they're like, can't wait for ice fishing season. I'm not that person. I'm not going to fault you for it. I think it's a little weird, but I get it. Also going to be too hot. I get it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's also because of like, it's easier to do the job here though, too.
Mm-hmm.
More than anything, but also I guess it's that my pasty complexion also favors the not summertime.
Yeah, me and Joe Kelly have talked about it. We walk out in the sun for 5 minutes and we've tanned at least a little bit.
That's the operative word, tan.
Yeah.
Me and Captain Redbeard over here, we ain't tanning.
No.
Actually, I got a nice tan on my recent vacation.
I guess I'll shut up. At least about you. Me, I don't tan.
Josh finally got in there. He's like,
good for you, though.
I burn once, and then I tan.
Good for you.
I think it's a lot of people, though, too. You'll go through the burn, and then all of a sudden, you're back to where you need to be. You tanned up. You're fine. And then I think that's a lot of people. Where me and Joe, very rarely are we going to burn.
Yeah, no. Me, I don't tan. I burn and reset.
Mm-hmm. I burn and reset.
That's what happens, okay? Like, there's no in between. I have option A, lobster, or option B, what I always am.
At least you're consistent.
There's this cool thing called sunscreen.
Still gonna burn. Option won't have like B. Lasting effects.
No, it's option B.
No, you just put on enough tan. Where you don't burn, and you.
So again, that's option B. What I always am.
Well,
pasty.
Sometimes you can put on sunscreen in the right way,
but then I'm still not tanning, Josh. That's the point of this.
Okay, I'm tanning lotion. How about that? That's the same thing
as he'll just burn.
I'll just burn. I'm telling you,
his skin don't allow for this.
We need to conduct some experiments here.
I've been around the sun for 36 years. I know my skin at this point.
He's conducted experiments just by living. It's not going to happen.
It's been trial by error, okay? A lot of error. Have you ever walked through an airport with sunburnt feet? I don't think so.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's not ideal.
Trial by error.
Sunburning the top of your feet is probably the worst.
That's a tough one.
I am a scientist within my own body. I know what I can and cannot do.
Yeah, the sunburn on the feet, that's a tough one.
Science is fun, except for when you deal with it with pain.
803-0550, the number to call. We talked a little Sabres today. If you did miss it, some arbitration talk came up this weekend. Not even arbitration talk. We just know what's happening. Bo Byram and Connor Timmins. Byram, though, he's in a situation he can pick what he wants, a 1-year or 2-year deal. Likely, though, he will pick 2 years to allow himself to walk to unrestricted free agency. That could open up the avenue for a trade, because now that he's heading to arbitration, he cannot be offer sheeted. We'll see how that kind of unfolds. Derek, you've mentioned it. You do think there's a good possibility this is the roster, minus a few prospects making the opening night roster, coming up, what have you. This is likely the roster they're going to go in with. I think there's still a possibility they can make a trade. I just don't think it's going to be a landmark one. Although, you could argue with Byram's expectation of being a number one defenseman, number one power play minutes, all that stuff, a team like St. Louis, who's been very much connected to the trade talks, will pay him $8.5, $9 million a year. That would... You would also get there that this is going to be a big trade.
You're telling me that Darren Ferris isn't going to do everything he can to get his client to get to UFA?
Any agent should do that. If you're not going to sign the big deal with the team, get him to
Ferris
UFA as fast
as
possible.
But Ferris is notorious for playing almost too much of hardball.
Mm-hmm.
Most infamously now north of the border within Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
If I say the word Darren Ferris to a Maple Leafs fan, I'm pretty sure I'm going to see potentially a vein pop out of a forehead. So, yeah, no, I'm not all that surprised that Darren Ferris is going to play hardball with the Sabres here.
Very unsurprising. Very, as the same with Derek Skin, consistent. You know what you're going to get. He's going to get burnt, and Darren Ferris is going to get his client to UFA. And that is what people are paid for. We've also been talking—
I don't get paid for
that. Well, that's fair. Because I mentioned doing a show outside, and you're like, absolutely not. So that's right.
No. You also said, Josh, you weren't here for this. He said
on
the roof.
Yeah. Do a show outside on the roof.
Do a show on the roof.
Yeah.
What kind of psychotic behavior is that?
I mean, because it's going to be harder for us to convince our boss to send us out somewhere.
No.
So instead it'll be, hey, we'll just, right above us, we'll just go a few floors up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
now, it depends on the day.
The weather was nicer to where it's not going to kill you going outside there. If it's 88 plus,
sunny and 75 though.
Let's go, baby.
Okay, but on the roof, it's not going to feel like that.
Yeah.
The roof.
You could set up a nice little tent for sitting there in the commercial
You know the
breaks?
Place where they put solar panels? Let's go there.
They do put solar panels on a lot of things nowadays, though. It's not just roofs.
Fields and stuff like that. Yeah.
It's the primary place that they put solar panels on.
I don't know. But solar farms, big open fields.
Yeah. Okay, ready? No shade.
You put a tent.
No shade.
And you say, hey, guys, during the break, you can go sit in the tent.
Have a little parasail right above me.
Yeah.
Just hang out.
They make those beach tents where you
there
stake
you
down two sides and then the wind blows it open and you go sit inside of it.
At least Callie was on my side, okay?
No, yeah, no.
No, I'm a big outdoor, when we went outside for class back in, elementary school, high school.
But also, what's
those
the point
big
of
days rocked.
But also, what's the point of us going on the roof? If you send us
It's an easier sell.
No, ready?
Random Tuesday.
People could come watch. You could sit in the parking lot
and watch.
On the
roof?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you going to see? You're looking up 90 degrees and you're seeing us on the roof.
Why do you sit far away?
What do I do? Do I get a t-shirt can and launch some down there at the spectators?
Sure.
Now we're talking.
Merch.
Actually, I just sold myself on it.
Yep, now we're talking. Thank you.
I just gave myself an excuse for a t-shirt can and I'm a threat to society.
Thank you. They don't fire that hard.
I saw Marty Brown accidentally unload one on someone's chest at a trade deadline years ago.
Well,
on TSN, it was the
you aim high and you let it just kind of the gravity take it. It does a big rainbow and it just falls down nice.
I need whoever is Sabretooth to try shooting it across the ice next year. It'll make it.
See what happens.
Just
do it.
Why not? It'll make it. You shoot it up to the 300s. It'll make it.
At the very least, be in the position to where if you shoot it across the ice, it will land amongst the players on the bench.
Yes, shoot it at the bench.
So that there's less error for it getting onto the ice.
Yeah, and then they can just pick it up and throw it into the crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go. Also talking Bills today, players that potentially by this time next year could wind up on ESPN's top 10 list. I think you could also just argue then the NFL's top 100 list that's also coming out today. But the first thing that came out, Jeremy Fowler's piece at ESPN, he's starting it. The position first up was running backs, and James Cook found himself at number 8. We've kind of mainly just kept this to Bills. We haven't really talked about the list itself, though, Derek. Starting off at number 10 is Alvin Kamara. Number 9, Joe Mixon. 8, as we mentioned, James Cook. 7, Jonathan Taylor. 6, Josh Jacobs with Green Bay. He absolutely had a big year for them after leaving the Raiders. 5, Christian McCaffrey.
I mean, it makes sense. It's more of a projection sort of thing.
It is.
But also,
he scares me now.
It's not the scaring thing. It's the, can you just stop having the worst luck ever?
His injuries have been rough.
But if you look at how he was playing before that, he was helping San Fran stay alive.
I think inarguably he had his best year in 23, his first full year in San Francisco. 272 rushing attempts, just under 1,500 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns. And then receiving-wise, he had 67 catches, 564 yards, and 7 touchdowns. I mean, he was getting MVP shouts as a 27-year-old running back. He was great. And he had some injury issues early in his career as well, 20 and 21.
It's the talent thing.
It's the talent. Yeah, it's if he's healthy, we know how good he's going to be. He's only also 29 years old. I don't know why it's felt like McCaffrey's been in the league forever and that he should be like 31, 32. Him just being 29 and also knowing full well how that team has changed up, the fact that they did pay Brock Purdy, he is going to have a big year if San Francisco is to be successful. So we'll see about that. Number 4, Bijan Robinson. I've mentioned a number of times on air.
That needs to be there.
I think he's one of the most underrated running backs right now in football purely because he's on the Falcons. They have not been good. Last year on 304 carries, he had over 1,400 yards and 14 touchdowns just running the ball. He's been great for them. They've added more weapons. I think if Michael Penix hits, you're looking at a guy that inarguably, I think by week 10, is going to be just a dude that everyone's talking about. Because you'll have him on your fantasy team, you'll be loving every second of it, and then the team will be winning, and so we'll all be waiting kind of for the playoff moments, the primetime games will have more meaning, that kind of stuff. But after last season, I think that's the right spot. Number 3, Jahmyr Gibbs, a pick that I will never forget now, because doing draft coverage, Derek, you were with us, and Nate Geary was hosting, we all kind of laughed at the Lions for going Gibbs. He was picked the same year as Bijan Robinson, picked in the top 10 as well. And it just, to us at the time, didn't make any sense. Since he's entered the league, he has been incredible for them.
I don't remember laughing at that pick, though.
You didn't?
No.
I don't mean Nate did then, at least.
Was that 23? Because I wasn't here.
Then that was just me and Nate then. We were laughing at it.
Yeah. I didn't laugh at that pick. I actually thought, okay, that's like, I don't know why they took a running back there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had DeAndre Swift and you let him go. Because that's when he goes to Philly.
That's right.
But that clearly has shown to be the right decision.
Yeah, last year, 250 rushing attempts, just over 1,400 yards, 16 touchdowns, and then recei 63 catches, or 52 catches, 517 yards, and 4 touchdowns. I will tell you, and this is why I'm very happy, I'm okay with Cook being at number 8. I've already mentioned guys like Bijan Robinson and Jahmyr Gibbs, who are sort of kind of built in the same mold as Cook, putting up way more efficient years. They're touching the ball more. They are clear-cut, dynamic playmakers. I don't think any Bills fan would argue that Bijan and Gibbs are not, in fact, better than Cook.
You know what's surprising, though, about this list?
Hmm.
Because when you get to number 2 and number 1, we already know who those
Unsurprising.
Are.
It's Derrick Henry and Saquon Barkley, yes.
I'm surprised Kyren Williams isn't on this list. I feel like he should be.
Do we have the honorable mentions? Honorable mentions, Bucky Irving. Oh, wow.
He's not. He's,
he's
on the also receiving votes.
We have honorable mentions, Bucky Irving, great rookie year. Aaron Jones, who's really bad in close yardage situations.
Yeah.
Devon Achan, speedster, explosive playmaker, Breece Hall. He's on the Jets. And
James, he's on the Jets.
And James Conner, who just has been also one of those models of consistency, gets touchdowns, gets yards, but won't be like top 10 in most categories.
Right.
Other guys also receiving votes, by the way, David Montgomery, Brian Robinson Jr., Chuba Hubbard, DeAndre Swift, and Kenneth Walker. Kyren Williams is absolutely somebody. I think that's a, like, that's a good shout by you, for because he's somebody.
Give that man his flowers. He's taking, what, like 83% of the snaps in the backfield? Like, that's a huge workload.
I was going to say, you talk about a guy getting the workload. That's Kyren Williams. 316 rushing attempts last year, literally just under 1,300 yards, 1,299, 14 touchdowns. He also, in terms of receptions, 34 for 182. But in terms of snap count, he is on the field almost 95% of the time.
But also, like, if James Cook is worthy of a top 10 addition here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that he is worthy of the conversation. How's Kyren Williams not even an honorable mention when for the last 2 years, he's gone over 1,100 yards in each year and 12 touchdowns?
Yeah.
The thing that you look at probably that kept him out of it, in terms of the top 10, at least for me, would be, you know, he's put the ball on the turf a lot last year.
Mm-hmm.
I put the ball on the ground 5 times. He lost 3 of them.
Kyren Williams, by the way, was not 95, it was 85, but he was at 86.7% of their offensive snap count.
Jeez, it's still a lot in this day and age.
A lot.
For bell cow running backs, that's a lot to do. It's also, he does not do a lot within the passing game.
No, he's very much,
he is a running back that produces. And I think that that's really something that we need to look at of, like, why is he not in that top 10, let alone, I did not know it was even worse than that, that he's not.
I think it might be efficiency. His yards per attempt is 4.1.
Still.
With how much
last
he's being
year was,
used, it's,
last
it's
year
unsurprising.
Was five.
No, the 2024, his yards per attempt was 4.1. His career is 4.5.
Okay, yeah, but like I'm saying, like the year prior, though, it was 5. So are we just going to go ahead and ignore all this? Because it should be something where you're like, if you're gearing up for it, I'm not ignoring the 7th leading rusher in the National Football League. But apparently they are.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if we're looking at Cook, who finished 8, with far less carries, he's almost a full yard more per average at 4.9 this year. And I think that might be it. Like, we give Kyren Williams a lot of credit for how much he is on the field for their plays, but that's sort of the same
conversation
we'd
be having
maybe with
Cook. Could you imagine, though, if they gave him a break, how much more effective he is?
Right, right. But what we're seeing now is he's not really super efficient. You know, he does a lot for them.
He's not super efficient because the team had no other option last year.
That could be argued, but the opposite could be argued of that's just kind of who he is. He's getting these numbers because of the workload. If the workload was less, he'd be kind of just like, oh, he's a fine running back. He's
good.
But
also, say it's less workload. Say it's about, what, 250 carries?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably looking more at 2023's numbers, which are averaging five yards a touch,
mm-hmm.
ho-hum another 12 touchdowns.
Yep. I think 2023 had a better shout than last year.
Yes, it's just
because I think
weird.
It showed that, like, once the workload went up, it went down. Because that's Cook's whole thing holding him back.
Right.
Is what's it going to look like when the workload goes up? And I think it might actually be someone like a Kyren Williams
showing.
But
to avoid him even in the honorable mentions.
I know,
like,
yeah, just as a receiving votes guy.
Top 15 on the list.
Yeah, that's tough.
Does sound a little criminal to me.
The Bucky Irving one's also pretty good honorable mention. Although, again, you see number 10, Alvin Kamara, and you're like, he's basically the Saints offense. I can understand it.
So, again,
he's the Saints offense. I can understand it. He was top 10.
If you're
using
the argument for Kamara.
Scrimmage yards last year.
Yeah. If you're using the argument for Kamara, you should use it for Williams.
Yeah.
So, I'm nitpicking at one player in particular there, but who's definitely curious. I'm like, why is he not in this top 10?
I just think, if he was just honorable mention, it'd be like, okay, like,
yeah,
that's fine.
I think we're good here.
It is the also receiving votes. Like, he's even further down the list where
he's not a top 15.
I was to say, you're getting to the point where you're just like, here's the 20 running backs, which, like, what do you enlist as that, I guess? Like, top 10 at least is worth it. Top 20, it's like, okay.
Top 15 even is like, okay, these are the guys that made it out. They're on the outside looking in, but mm-hmm. they're worth mentioning. I'm sorry, but Kyren Williams not being on there is is an interesting oversight to me.
803 because also,
like, Joe Mixon, I don't really think that Mixon had himself particularly a great season last year. He was solid.
He's just always there from
and
what
I think
I know.
The solid consistency with him is always going to be like a factor.
Well, now I brought up yards per attempt for Kyron Williams. It's the exact same. 4.1. I mean, he just objectively had a worse season.
Yeah.
Objectively had a worse season than Kyron Williams.
Thank you.
It's less rushing attempts, but also he played two less games than Kyron Williams.
Yeah.
12.99, 14 touchdowns in 16 games and 14 games mixed.
Well, 12.99 is still pretty impressive, considering. Yeah.
But then in two less games, he's just over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns. That's for Mixon and at 4.1. Yeah, that might be more towards the line of like name recognition because also he doesn't do a ton in the receiving. Well, 36 catches last year in the receiving game. What was Kyron Williams? 34. Yeah, Williams had objectively a better season.
Game. It's a passing game and the lack that they use him in.
Well, it's for both. Mixon only had 36 catches, and Williams had 34 for much less yardage, but it's how they used him in the passing game compared to how Mixon was used in Houston.
Like I said, it's all fascinating. You can argue a good amount of players no matter what, but that one's still really, really weird to me.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Also, some cool news in college football we haven't gotten to yet. We'll get to that after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR. On a beautiful Monday morning, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. If you did miss it, college football, there was a bit of somewhat locally exciting news over the weekend as five-star wide receiver Calvin Russell committed to Syracuse.
Yoy.
And per 24/7 Sports, this is the app I traditionally use for college recruiting and keeping up with the recruiting rankings and all that stuff. He would be considered the third highest recruit in the history of Syracuse football and the highest rated recruit for the Orange since 2000. If he were to put pen to paper on National Signing Day, Fran Brown, the head coach going into his second year at Syracuse, already came in with very much a heralded reputation as a recruiter per 24/7 Sports. He was ranked as the best recruiter in 2023. He proved that last year when he was able to land Kyle McCord out of Ohio State, got him to transfer to Syracuse, led a wonderful passing attack. They were 10-3 last year, including wins over a ranked Miami team. I believe they beat Miami. They did win the Holiday Bowl over Washington State. They had a very, very impressive year last year in the first year of Fran Brown. And I will say locally, Derek, that's something, and I've seen a lot of people say it now too, in the era where, yes, they beat the number six, Miami, Florida, and then Washington State. I knew I was right on that. But on this, and I do want to mention this because it is something now, you know, we don't see it a lot in the pros. And I think college, we should start seeing it more. If you don't bring juice year one in the transfer portal era,
you're probably never bringing juice.
Yep, and it's okay to move on. Look at locally, Buffalo and Syracuse. Buffalo went 9-4 last year, a bowl win. They're putting up recruiting ranking records for them personally, not MAC recruiting records, but for them personally, they look like this next class might be one of the best they've ever put up. In 2026, they're bringing in a four-star edge rusher from Ohio, of all places, which is heavily dominated by, obviously, Ohio State, but also teams like Toledo, who has been a power in the MAC for decades. UB goes in there, gets a four-star edge rusher, one of their best recruits ever. And then Syracuse, they bring in Fran Brown. And what does he do? He brings in their best recruit since 2000, their third best ever. Now let's see if he puts pen to paper, and that's for both of them, puts pen to paper and gets going. But to be fair, both programs seem to be trending in the right direction, and it took 1 year with their coaches to come in and completely flip how the programs were seen in their respective conferences.
And especially UB, who has had a couple of years of just really down times.
And it wasn't where, like they were winning two games, but I know the last head coach, Mo Lundquist, the feeling around him was not good at all.
It was not a good vibe. It was very much UB became another like forgotten scene once again. Mm-hmm. not just like locally, but within the MAC entirely. It just turned into one of these things of like, okay, yeah, UB is here too. So what? And for Lembo to show up, again, you could not have asked for a better season from them when it came to a first year for somebody to attack. Man, for it to now get to, you win the Bahama Bowl, and it's not in the Bahamas next year.
That's right. That's very much right.
But you were a threat to make the MAC conference championship game.
Yeah, they were there literally to the end.
Right to the end. So you're hanging around. You go out on top with a great bowl win. And now you have an opportunity to become a mainstay with this kind of recruiting class in the MAC and be able to try to put your stamp on this organization, or not organization, on this program.
You know how I feel about it. I think we're very close to being able to call them organizations. Right now, but, we still call them programs, but we're getting close.
I obviously would imagine with how college football goes, you're not going to have Pete Lembo here for very long.
I don't want to say anything yet because I've gotten burned so many times.
The amount of times we've had promising coaches within UB.
Yeah, and then they leave.
They leave for greener pastures because that's a mid-majors destiny, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a great time talking with Becky Burke this past year, right?
Yep. Wins the NIT, WNIT, she's off to Arizona.
Yeah, like we are not going to be doing that this time around.
Yeah, I'm not going to stamp my name to anything.
No, it's just...
In my heart of hearts, it does feel like Lembo is somebody that kind of knows I'm a MAC coach. I'm not. I shouldn't go to the Big Ten or the ACC.
Oh, but if you get,
but also if you
get
win,
that offer, you, it's because you've also earned it. Mm-hmm. That's the big point of this, is that it's hard work rewarded, and it's not with the program. You're not dancing with the one that brought you here, but you're still going to a dance. And now it's not dance with the one who brought you here. It's now you get the pretty one that's staring at you across the room and says, I really like your vibe.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, like everything that you've, like, you know, it's the dream. I mean, it's
the dream.
It very much becomes the dream. I will tell you, though, and it was the same with Becky Burke, and we ultimately did get a championship locally here. It was the WNIT, and it was a wonderful run. And it was drama filled. It was great. By the end of it, I mean, Alumni Arena was packed. BetMGM has the odds for the MAC football championship. Toledo leads the way at plus 250. Buffalo's in second at plus 300. And that's with questions at quarterback because CJ Agbonah is out. They brought in a transfer, Robertson, I believe is his last name, from UConn. But their rushing attack should be awesome. They bring in a lot of guys from last year. A very, very veteran-led defense. Sean Dolak out. Red Murdoch, though, who was with him in most statistical categories last year, like just finishing second to his first. He comes back. And they had a good recruiting class going into this year as well. I mean, I've said it on air on the nightcap. I've said it off air a lot too. I'm genuinely ecstatic for UB football. I know college football doesn't get the same rah-rah that pros do. And to be fair—
And especially here, it's a Bills city.
Well, and Sales brought this up too, especially if you talk MAC football. Buffalo's the only one that has a pro team in these cities. In the cities that all these teams are in, they're college towns. Buffalo's the one that's not, quote-unquote. But I'll tell you right now, I went to that homecoming game, a game they ultimately lost. But I went last year. I had a ball. And now that I've seen what Lembo's building, I think they've been great on social media. There is a lot of that recruiting buzz going on.
You know what's more fascinating?
I'm going as early as I can to a game because I don't really want to go for the cold weather stuff because I like watching Maxion at home on a Tuesday night. I don't need to go to the game.
That's right. The Tuesday nights are a big thing about that. Like my first thought was I got to get out of a Saturday shift.
Yeah, no. There's
like,
Tuesday
I
nights
out of
here,
a
baby.
Saturday show, and it's like, nope.
Tuesday nights.
You can have the Tuesday night action, baby. And hey, guess what? You've probably got nothing going on.
There you go.
What's going to challenge me? A Sabres game?
What? And I don't think you necessarily have to pick between them. I'll be honest. Like in terms of locally, Bills are the one I'm most excited for. They're in a Super Bowl window. They're constantly competing. Of course, I'm right there. But I will tell you, and I've said it enough on air. People know I'm a college football junkie. And while I'm a diehard Texas fan, I grew up going to UB football games. I grew up going to Joe Licata playing quarterback and Bo Oliver and the Khalil Mack years, James Starks years, name it. Those are the years I went and I had a blast going. And last year was the first time I went in like maybe 10 years. And in part is because I was getting the juice for going to college games. I was going to a Texas game later that year. But when they were good a few years ago with Lance Leipold, that was awesome. I wish they could have added a MAC championship.
Right.
Namely, because I think if they would have added a MAC championship, I think there's a really good chance that track in the middle of the field is not there.
Yeah.
I think you would have gotten stadium renovations if they had at least won one MAC championship. I mean that seriously. If you added something like that, that's...
It's never too late.
It's never too late. You have to have some success. And I think if they win a MAC championship this year with Lembo, they're ranked second going into the season with questions at quarterback. If they even have a solid quarterback play... That line kind of tells me they
even
might
steady.
Actually jump over Toledo there.
I wouldn't even
their
say
running
solid.
Attack's going to be amazing.
Steady. This isn't the NFL. You don't have to always have spread offenses or elite passing attacks to win.
Right.
Especially in a mid-major.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you can get by with
consistent. Steady, consistent quarterbacking.
And their week one game, it's on the road. Could be a really good test. It's at Minnesota, a Big Ten team. A good team. P.J. Fleck's still there coming over from Western Michigan. He's been there for a while, built a really good program at Western Michigan before going to Minnesota. That game will be on national TV, Fox Sports 1. That could be a really good test. They could lose that game, but the way they run the ball with their veteran defense, I am so curious what that line will look like about a week before that game. August 28th, by the way, will be that game. So it's right around the Bills preseason when that's wrapping up. That is a game I want to see the line. UB will not be favored. But if they're in single digits, I think they could absolutely pull the upset on Minnesota. But it's a team I am genuinely looking forward to keeping up on. I'll be honest. And funny enough, it was kind of the same way I was with Texas. I mean, I've been a diehard Texas fan most of my life. And same with UB. I fell in love with those basketball teams. And I mentioned the Drew Willey and James Starks and Naaman Roosevelt teams. I fell in love with them as well. But you get into that monotonous rhythm where you're just like, all right, there's no vibes here, there's no juice. And I was sort of with there with UB, but same with Texas when they hired Steve Sarkisian, when they hired Pete Lembo. And yet very early on in those tenures, it did feel different. Lembo was much easier because literally first year results were different. Sark, it took a little while. But Lembo, right away, I mean, me and Josh were able to talk with him right when he was hired, when he had to hit the recruiting trail and he just had landed, the vibes felt different. I thought he was going to be kind of like an older, old school ball coach, a little bit of a curmudgeon, probably hates that he's on the air. Instead, he came in with a ton of personality. He's a movie guy. He's got so much energy. And I think that's carried on to how they are with their social media team and stuff like that. And now within year two, they're... plus 300 to win the MAC championship, only behind Toledo, who's been a MAC power forever, and it's plus 250 to plus 300. They're right there.
Also, this is just me saying this sort of thing. If you are a football fan that loves to get to stadiums, well, first of all, tickets to go to Minnesota are like $25.
Giddy up.
If you're willing to take that drive. Okay, right. So it's a nice, cheap little ticket that you can get to go to the UB Minnesota opener. I also think that if you are a huge football fan, you need to go to at least one major conference stadium at least once in your life. I went to a Purdue football game against Michigan. Watched them get the brakes beaten off of them by Denard Robinson.
Yeah.
At Purdue.
I have not heard that name in a long time.
That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
But man, the scene was still awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to a Purdue football game.
Yeah, it's not Ohio State. It's not Michigan, Denard Robinson.
It's not even Minnesota.
Yeah, to a certain extent. Yeah. If you went to a Purdue basketball game, maybe different, but you're right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the vibe was still awesome. The stadium is still very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's fresh looking. Get to a major conference stadium to see the money that gets thrown around by a conference.
Yeah, it's kind of wild.
It's actually kind of wild. But also, you look at Minnesota Stadium, though, like aesthetically pleasing.
Yes. I think a lot of college football stadiums actually are. They don't do too much. A lot of the buildings are also older. That helps.
Yes. They do like to preserve a lot of history.
Perfect example. Big House, Michigan.
Right.
There's not like extra levels. You pop out of the entrances and you either go up or down. That's it. There's 110,000 people in there and that's all. Like there's no extra, juice to that. That's what it is. And I love that. You can also go to Syracuse. They are a little bit further down in the ACC championship odds. They are in a much bigger conference. Their team's a bit ahead of them. But what Fran Brown is building, 10-3 last year, and he's building some momentum on the recruiting trail, I think that is absolutely a program to watch, because that's not something that's maybe a bit of the opposite with UB. Fran Brown, you might be able to keep if you want to put money into football. And to be fair, Syracuse has been trying to do that for years. It's why they left the Big East to go to ACC. They wanted to be more of a football power, and there is a bit of an opening there. I don't think Bill Belichick will be all that good at North Carolina, and the ACC for years has been run by one of two teams, Florida State or Clemson, and for the last 10 years it's been Clemson. And that's going to continue. Clemson, you know, by the way, is a monster this
year. You
know
what's interesting? Like, I doubt that there's a lot of, like, USC fans that live in the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's so much more manageable to get to one of those games now that they're in the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah. Because now you can go to, like, Penn State and you'll be able to see USC at Penn State.
Yes.
Which used to be, like, exclusive for a special Rose Bowl season where they both made it.
Yeah. It's very much like it's an atypical type of matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to see a prestigious team like that, well, guess what? Hey, USC's in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
How long is that going to be there for? Also, an excuse to go to Penn State?
I almost went to a game in college, and I wish I did, especially after my experience going to Texas. And even I've been to a Syracuse game in the last 3 years.
Did I mention it because I looked at the Purdue schedule saying, okay, who's going to beat the hell out of the Boilermakers this year? And I'm like, oh, USC. They're hosting them on September 13th.
That is so weird that Southern California is going to be in West Lafayette, Indiana. That
or
makes no sense to
me. I was
me.
Like, okay, never hey, will. Like maybe if I wanted to take a trip, is there a winnable game in there? I don't know. Probably not. They went winless last year outside of the FCS team that they faced in week one. You know,
who really counts that if you're a major program?
But would that stop me from asking my buddy to be like, hey, you want to go watch them against Ball State for the first week because tickets are as low as $8?
Say, tickets could be very cheap. Most expensive thing.
Savers bargain hunting bin right here. That's the quality I'm looking at.
There you go. I already mentioned it. If you want to throw some money down on these guys and you're not in New York State, because you can't bet on college teams in New York State if you're in New York State, I believe. I think overall. But Syracuse plus 5,000 to win the ACC. They're tied with NC State and Pittsburgh in those odds. Well, for the MAC championship, Buffalo is second in the MAC at plus 300, just behind Toledo at plus 250. College football. Just right around the corner, starting in August. They start a few weeks before the NFL. 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. If you did miss it, Jeremy Fowler. Top 10 series is beginning over on ESPN. It is free to read. Top 10 running backs to start off that series, and James Cook finds himself on the list at number 8. And then in the NFL Top 100 players, James Cook had another nice award for himself. He comes in at number 89 in what is going to be a massive season for the future of his career. I mean, if Cook, we mentioned it, I mean, if Cook puts up a similar season, I think there's a good chance this is it for him in Buffalo.
Right.
I'm not saying that with any sort of sadness or irritation that he might leave. Go get your money, man. I have no issues with that. A team will pay you more. And Derek, we've talked about it a lot when we've mentioned his usage rates. I think it's somewhat of a negative. But to be fair, him and his agent could sell that to a different team that, hey, what would I be if I got 260 carries compared to the around 200 that is usually what he hits. He hit, what was it? I think it was 200 and then 207 or something like that. He's been right around there. Sorry, 237 then 207. So he's been right around there. So for him, he can go, what if I hit 260? You know, what am I at then kind of deal?
Yeah, and part of this is ultimately the question, like how much more effective could he be if he has more touches, for example? Or is he just who he is and that it, like, it doesn't matter how many touches you give him, he's still going to be the same player. But again, it's a nice James Cook day, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't say this has been negative for him at all.
No, it's been a pretty good day. The Fowler list with the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not Fowler's list. It was asking coaches, executives, and scouts. And then the players, they seem to agree as well. Though I have my qualms with the NFL Top 100. I think
we all do.
I think we all do. I think it jumped the shark. We need to stop. But, you know, I understand why the NFL Network does this.
Remember the full TV show? Remember that? It was an hour long each episode for like 10 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy. That was a whole thing.
But also, you then get to see the hilarious rankings that the players have, and you're like, oh, you guys don't know ball either. Okay.
It's all about names, baby. It's all about name recognition. It's all about names. Can I understand that, though? That's going to do it for me and Derek. We'll be back on for Wednesday. Sal Capaccio will be back on tomorrow for the Extra Point Show. We'll be back on Wednesday. Until then, have a great rest of your day. Sabres Live coming up next. This is WGR.
Go Blue Jays.